So when I hand over, start fucking.
Hello.
Wait. How does that go?
At least he got the fuck up out of the way early.
Listen.
Oh, fuck, I set on the dog's goal.
How do we do this again?
I have no idea. I can't remember.
All right, let's figure this shit out. From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm a nice and toasty Scott Colbert.
And I am a calm, cool, and collected horror nerd, Todd Starooch.
Oh, fuck off and die.
Wow. That's nice, Scott. I can't help it if it's 20 degrees cooler here than it is.
Well, but honestly, that's really not saying much, because considering the humidity makes it feel like it's about the temperature of the sun.
Oh, dude, you are not kidding. As we record yesterday, I went with my daughter to her college new student orientation.
How was that?
Well, it was good. Like, it was a lot of information, you know, but it was good. She got to, you know, register for her classes and meet her advisor and meet other, students who will be incoming, you know, freshman year. So it was cool. But a couple of things did make me laugh, right? So they send the schedule ahead of time and it, you know, gives you all the times for everything. And it's like, okay, check-in is from 8:15 to 9 o'clock, including a complimentary continental breakfast. Okay. So we show up at this, we check ourselves in and they're like, okay, upstairs is the room where we have our breakfast and coffee and everything. We go to this room and apparently $40,000 in tuition plus a $200 enrollment fee plus a $30 registration fee for orientation gets you for breakfast bottled water, coffee, some assorted apples and bananas, and a pile of Nature Valley granola bars.
Oh, wow.
That was Jesus. The breakfast. And I'm like, holy fucking shit. You know, even my daughter was like, Dad, I wish I had gotten up a little earlier so we would have had time for the breakfast at the hotel, because we drove down the night before because it's like an hour and a half from my house. So we didn't want to have to leave at like 5 a.m. So and the hotel had like actual like hot serving trays with like eggs and sausage and bacon and stuff, you know, but nope. We're like, ah, don't worry about that, hon. They're giving us breakfast at Penn State. Well, I just couldn't believe it, dude. You know, not only, tuition is one thing, but there was a $30 registration fee for orientation. And, you know, like 200 kids times 30. That's a pretty good chunk of change. Yeah. And, you know, breakfast. Oh, here's a granola bar. Enjoy. But we have two different flavors, so there's something for everyone.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they had fruit, too.
They did. But we sort of just giggled about it. She's like, well, Dad, I guess this is what I have to look forward to.
Yeah, right? But Jesus, we get fruit for free at work, for God's sake.
Well, yeah, I mean, us too. Like, when I do go to my office, like, we have snacks and coffee and beverages and stuff. And most of my clients have that as well, you know, just free, you know, snacks and stuff. We just thought it was funny. But other than that, the orientation was really good. You know, we got a real, you know, a full tour of the campus and stuff. And again, just tons and tons of information. It's a little overwhelming, you know. But the good news is, I told my daughter, you live in a whole new world. You have access to all this stuff online. When I went to college, we just got mailed like endless papers in the mail. And I had to keep like a big folder of everything in a notebook, what the fuck is the term? One of them three hole punch notebooks, you know.
Yeah, I know. Loose leaf notebook.
Right. Thank you. It's how freaking long ago it's been since I touched one of those.
Do they even sell loose leaf notebooks anymore?
They do. Oh, trust me. You can buy a very fancy one with the Penn State logo on it in the bookstore for an outrageous amount of money compared to one you could get at like Walmart.
Oh, I'm sure.
But the one thing that I really like in ways times have changed, right? So they had at lunchtime, they had like all these tables and booths set up with all the resources available to the students. Like they have a mental health office where you can go, and if a student is struggling, they can actually get like 8 free therapy sessions per semester.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They have, you know, like all these different programs, Center for Student Success, and like all this stuff, all these resources. If you're struggling in math, say, they'll assign you a math tutor, you know. I showed up for college and are like, here's your schedule. Good luck finding all your classrooms. And we hope you survive your freshman year. Okay.
By the way, it'll be $3,500 for each textbook.
Yes. So that was, even my daughter said, because my daughter, you know, has some issues, you know, and with anxiety or whatever. And she's like, oh, this is so awesome, Dad, you know, that they have all this stuff available. And I'm like, honey, for what we're paying for this school, be sure you take advantage of everything they have to offer, you know?
Exactly.
Just use it, you know?
If you don't need it, use it. Get your money's worth.
Yeah, like if you're struggling, you know, with a subject or whatever, I said, your old man, you know, it's been a long time since I looked at algebra or calculus or anything. I am not going to be able to help you, you know.
Yeah.
Seriously, man, I'm good at my job and that's about it. You know, and I said, man, they offer you like free tutoring services and stuff, use that shit, you know.
There is
no reason to struggle, you know. Again, when I went, you just had to find a study buddy who was smarter than you in that subject, you know.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
and hope that they would partner up and help you, you know. But it was good. Her campus, she's at one of the smaller Penn State, they're called Commonwealth campuses. And there's only about 4,000 students on her campus. I know that seems like a lot, but the main Penn State campus has 60,000 students.
Jesus, you know? God.
I'm going to post some pictures of it, but it looks like Hogwarts. Like,
oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, it's all these big old stone buildings, and there's a pond, a duck pond. It's very rural. Yeah, well, not rural, but looks like a park. A lot of trees, a big, nice rolling hills. It's a beautiful, beautiful campus. So
sounds nice, actually.
Yeah, I'm going to post some pictures of it, but yeah. She's excited but very nervous, you know. And I said, well, honey, that's to be expected, you know. This is going to be your first time out completely on your own, you know.
Yeah.
But she's got a good head on her shoulder. She'll figure it out.
Yeah. So. Well, it sounds like it was a nice time.
Dude, just real quick, and then I'll get off the topic. Just because it's funny how people are just, well, two different things. People are very situationally unaware, you know? and they just do stupid things. And then we sit in these sessions, right? And then this really made me laugh. That's like, okay, are there any questions? And I'm like, here we go. And some people asked very good questions, you know, about the school or whatever. And then this one really made me laugh. So it was called Ask the Experts panel. And they had like the head of student athletics, the head of security, the head of student services, like all the, you know, all these department heads.
Right.
And a woman goes, so the way it works at Penn State Abington, which is where she's going, they don't have dorms on campus like a big university. They have this thing called Lions Gate, and it's about a half a mile away from the actual campus. And it's more like an apartment complex, but it's owned by Penn State, and only Penn State students can stay there, right? So it's like a dorm, but off campus. So this woman goes, my son is going to be staying in Lions Gate, and I know that the campus itself and the dining room and everything is closed on the weekend. So like, what is he supposed to do for like food and stuff? Well, I could tell that the head of student affairs was struggling to not laugh. So I said, I just blurted out, well, ramen noodles are cheap and easy to make. You know, it's like, are you serious? Like, you're going to send your kid off to school and you're worried that they're just going to starve on the weekends. And meanwhile, right. Scott, it's a college town, right? Abington. If when you drive through the actual town of Abington, it looks like a college town. There's a million pizza joints and fast food places and coffee shops. Like you could not possibly go hungry, you know, like, you know, it's like, if you don't know how to acquire food in 2023, maybe how did you get into Penn State exactly? You know?
Oh, Jesus. Well, that's parents today. Oh. You would be surprised, or maybe not, how many times I've talked to somebody at work and they're talking about needing to get a passport for their child. And, you know, I asked them, I said, well, are they a minor? You know, are they under 15? Because if they're 16 or older, then they get an adult passport. But 15 and below, it's a minor's passport. And, oh, no, they're 22 or 20. Or, and I'm like, do they not know how to use a fucking phone? Yeah. If you need to call to get a passport for them, maybe they shouldn't be traveling overseas.
Right.
They might get lost on the way to the airport. I hate to sound like an old fart, but really, basically I am. But kids today are just so over-pampered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just, you know, when I was 18, my parents made me make my own phone calls for my doctor's appointments. They wouldn't do it for me, and I lived at home.
Dude, you are 100% right, man. I told my daughter, I said, listen, when you go away to college, I'm very different than her mother. Her mother is more the helicopter parent than I am. I said, my job is to be here to support you. Your job is to learn and to just figure out how to be on, to live your life, you know, to start adulting, you know, because mommy and daddy, sadly, are not going to be around forever. And this is to me, Scott, this is like part, you know, obviously you go to college to get an education in a specific field, but it also teaches you, supposedly, how to learn and be on your own. You know, it did me, you know, I had to learn how to take care of myself. My parents were not helicopter parents. They were like, figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't figure out how to eat. And then the woman who was the department head was like, she's like, listen, folks, the best advice I can tell you is teach your babies how to cook. You know, it's really not difficult. But that was the kind of questions. And then it got to be like, it's towards the end of the day. And I'm thinking, God, I feel like I'm in high school again, where it's like one more person raises their fucking hand, I'm going to lose it. You know? I am going to lose it. But overall, that was a very, very long-winded way to tell you that it went very well. Wish it wasn't 90 and humid every day, but I'm sure you don't want to hear me complain about the weather.
Yeah, today will be the 23rd day in a row where it will be 110, over 110.
Wow.
And just for perspective, in the average year, we generally only have 21 days total of 110 plus. We've already beaten that for the year, and there's actually no end in sight for it. It's going to be 110 plus for the foreseeable future.
Wow.
So it's, you know, and, you know, I've seen posts from people on Facebook about it and different groups from around Arizona, and people make these comments like, well, it's summer in Arizona. That's what it's always like. Well, no, that's not what it's always fucking like. The average in June or July is 107 or 108, you know, not 117, 118. It was almost 120 a couple of days ago. I said, that's not normal, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, these are like climate change deniers. So, of course, they're not going to want to admit that anything is even slightly out of the ordinary, because that might mean that they were wrong about something. But it's, you know, I want to complain about it, but honestly, you know, the air conditioning at home works fine, you know, as well as it can. But I'm not home during the hottest part of the day. I'm at work. And at work, it's like a fucking ice box. Because, you know, with all the computers and everything, they've got to keep it all cool.
Sure.
But it's like an ice box. So I go from, you know, the temperature of the sun to the North Pole, you know. And we wonder why people get sick constantly. So, but I feel sorry for the, like, stray animals out. There's a bunch of stray cats around the building where I work, and I feel sorry for them. Now, I know they're part of a colony, and I know that there's, like, a cat habitat type thing that comes by and takes care of them. I've seen them come out and feed the strays and whatnot. So they get taken care of, but still, that, you know, I still feel bad for them. But then I remember, you know, my cat, pure of heart and dumb of ass, will lay right in the sun. You know, it's 118 degrees, and she's laying in the window getting the sun. So, you know, apparently he just doesn't affect. But my Odetta, my last cat, was like that too. I just loved the warmth. In fact, I have a gas stove. And London likes to lay on top of the stove because it's warm.
Wow.
I don't get it personally. I don't understand that. You would think with all of the fur cats have, that they wouldn't want the extra warmth, but she loves it. So
when I still lived at home, there we had a family cat, and my parents had a wood/coal-burning stove in the living room, and my dad was a little bit crazy. So, like, in the winter, it would get so hot that we would go outside, you know, to cool off in the winter. But the cat would lay so close to this wood burning stove that if you tried, like, to pet him, like, you couldn't, because, like, his fur was so hot.
You'd
be like, ow. And you're like, how is he not dead? You know, like, but that was his spot. He really liked the excessive heat. So
yeah,
whatever. I don't know.
I don't get it. Anyway, I started to say, before I get sidetracked by stray animals, that between being at home, being on the bus, which mostly has air conditioning that works, unlike 20 or 30 years ago when even though buses had air conditioning, it very rarely ever worked. These new buses that they've got now, air conditioning almost always works. And being in the work building, I don't feel it that much aside from the walk from my apartment to the bus stop. And sometimes I'll take a Lyft because it's only like $10 to take the Lyft to work.
Mm-hmm.
13 tip. So I'll take that. And I've actually been taking that because it's just too fucking hot for me to stand at a bus stop right now. And even though I had my cataract surgery a few weeks ago, it takes, a couple of months to fully heal, and I'm supposed to, wear sunglasses and, take care of it and shit like that.
Right, right.
So I've been taking a lift to work the last couple of days. I may do it today, too. It doesn't affect me that much because I'm not out in it. But then I look at some of these construction workers and I'm like, how the fuck are they doing it? You know?
Oh, dude, you ain't lying, and that, my brother does construction, but up in Alaska, and he said that he would not ever trade it. He's like, it's actually so much easier to do construction in the cold because you can just, they have they're prepared for it. They have insulated clothing that they wear and stuff that, but in the heat, what can you do?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Then I think about the firefighters who have to, fight fires, in those get-ups that they wear when it's 115 out and you're going into a fucking burning building. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And I don't know how they do it.
Me either. Dude, I am not one for heat at all, ever. My dad, it doesn't faze him at all. Like, it's, today is not awful. Like, today is like 85, but still humid. I'll bet my dad's mowing his lawn today like it's nothing.
Yeah.
It just doesn't faze him. Even when I was younger and not fat, I hated the heat. I just couldn't function in it,
Yeah, I'm the same way. And my father was the same way. When we first moved out here and we got the first house out in Glendale, he did all the landscaping for it himself. And he's out there in the middle of the summer digging a trench in this hard-packed fucking desert earth. And, the sun is blazing down and, he's got a bandana, tied around his head and sweating up a storm. And it just didn't faze him. Men of a certain age, meaning our parents, were just built differently than we are.
Yeah, man. And thank God, because this is why I never, ever, criticize or put down anyone's profession, right? Those guys, those people are out there building houses and shit and putting on roofs and paving driveways and shit so that we have places to live. Yep. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
More power to them. They're building a house right up the street from me. The owners bought it and they're expanding it, making it bigger. And I see these guys crawling around on the roof and stuff when it's 90. And I'm like, holy shit,
Yeah. Well, I've always thought that, if you're going to bitch about a job, but it's a job you wouldn't do, then you just need to shut the fuck up.
100%. 100%. From an early age. Now, it's because my dad, it's probably because my dad was a blue collar guy. My dad's a mechanic. you know, even we even taught our daughter, like, from an early age, like, not to look down at, like, the guys working on the road or whatever, the construction guys or whatever, because they're the ones that make the world go around. You know what I mean? Like, the,
yeah,
you know, the roads you drive on, well, someone has to make them, you know?
Well, exactly.
And that's not some, oh, I'm such, you know, I'm so progressive. Like, I just saw how hard my dad worked, you know, to fix the trucks that kept the town running, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, Jesus.
All right. I'm done virtue signaling for today.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I don't know what you're going to say next. So. You might, but
yeah, well, that makes two of us because I have no clue.
Well, there's a certain movie that you finally saw.
Oh,
that
yes.
We never talked about that I know you you wanted to talk about.
And I'm still rather traumatized by it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have mixed feelings about it. And it's the Guardians of the Galaxy, the final chapter or chapter three or whatever the fuck they're calling it. I forget what. But it's the final chapter with Starman and
mm-hmm.
the others. And
Star-Lord.
Jesus. Star-Lord. What is Starman, that's the John Carpenter movie.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of it that I like. I thought William Poulter was fantastic as Adam. That's the character's name, right? Adam?
Adam Warlock, yep.
Adam Warlock. I like Poulter. I think he's a fantastic actor. I saw him in Meet the Millers.
And yeah, that's a good movie. Yeah.
It was surprisingly good.
Yeah, it's better than you would think it would be. Yeah.
It's better than it has any right to be.
100%. Yeah.
But he was so good in that. And I didn't even realize that he wasn't American. He's English.
Mm.
But he does an American accent so well. Anyway, I like him a whole lot. And I enjoyed him in the movie, although he didn't have a whole lot to do. And I liked that they explored Rocket's past. I thought that was kind of overdue in the series. But holy fucking shit, did it have to be so traumatic? I feel like I have PTSD from watching that movie.
I know I do.
You know, and I love animals. You know, I love animals. You know, I've got pets. Well, a pet. I have always loved animals. It's no secret. I've always said I like animals more than I like most people. And that still holds true. And here's the thing. Every single fucking critter in this movie that they used was all CGI. They weren't even real fucking animals. And they still traumatized me.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you anthropomorphize an animal and give it, you know, speech and human qualities and make them so adorable, and then you kill the motherfuckers, you're traumatized. And I remembered what you had said about it a little bit when you mentioned you had seen it. And I remembered vaguely, you know, what the reviews about it were like and what people were saying about it when it first came out. But nothing prepares you for exactly how intense those scenes of animal cruelty and animal experimentation and just how grotesque some of the experiments are. And then when Rocket escapes from the laboratory, that whole sequence, I could not watch that. I fast-forwarded until he was out of there. I could not deal with that. And when the movie was over, I was kind of glad I watched it because I thought it was a good way to end that part of the series. I'm sure there's going to be more Guardian movies with the new cast. I have no doubt about that. But Jesus, what a downer 85% of that movie was. Or that's probably exaggerated. Maybe 50%. You know, those scenes of Rocket's past were just it was too much. It was just too much.
Yeah, man, I get it. And there were there was a significant number of little kids in the audience when I went to see it, you know? And I'm like, oh my God. These kids are gonna have some nightmares tonight. And how about that? You know?
Oh, they're gonna be in therapy for years because of that movie.
Yeah. I did like it a lot, and I think I said this when I talked about it, but I liked Will Poulter as well. But to your point, I just think like Adam Warlock didn't have enough to do. He just sort of shows up from time to time in the movie.
Yeah,
stuff happens, and then we don't see him again for a while, you know?
Yeah, he shows up as kind of comic relief.
Yeah.
Because really, after his initial appearance, when he's chasing after Rocket at the very beginning of the movie, he's just kind of portrayed as kind of dopey, for lack of a better word. And which is fine. I'm not familiar with the character from the comics, so I don't know how true to the comic his character is. But in spite of all of the sadistic animal elements in the movie, there still is a lot of humor in it, like any typical Guardians movie. And I never want to see it again, for one thing. And I'm it's like the elephant, you know, there are movies that you're glad you saw and they think they're great, but you never want to see them again. Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is one. The Elephant Man is another. I just can't torture myself with the Elephant Man anymore. I just can't do it.
I get that.
It really needed to be reined in. It didn't need to be that tense. Especially at a movie that's primarily aimed at kids. And then they dropped an F-bomb in it. I'm like, where did that come from? Is this Deadpool? Did I?
Well, you're allowed one in a PG-13 movie. You're allowed one F-bomb. So
yeah. And it was well-placed. I will say that. But still, it just still seemed out of place in a Guardians movie.
Yeah, I guess even though they are a little like edgier, I think, than the other Marvel movies, you know.
Oh, definitely.
They deal with like a lot of themes, like the abandonment theme with Star-Lord, you know, and his father and all that, and Yondu and whatnot. So, but yeah, I get it. It was very intense, man. All the animal stuff and experimentation, like you said. I did like the High Evolutionary as a villain because he just firmly believed that what he was doing was right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so he was a lot like Thanos in that respect.
Yeah, he just felt, hey, I'm doing the right thing, but I'm just going about it in a very fucked up way. To your point, though, it was a fitting closure to that chapter, that iteration of the Guardians.
Yes.
You know?
Definitely.
So, and listen, I'm all for that. I am glad to see that hopefully they're not going to just milk it to death. You know, let's just go in a different direction. Although, who knows what that will be. So, So speaking of movies and stuff, I just want to bring up something about the writer strike and the SAG-AFTRA strike. I get it. I am not close enough to it to really understand all the issues in depth, you know, but when it comes to these types of labor disputes, on the whole, I tend to side with the labor side of things, you know. The posts on social media, though, I just want to say, I think are getting a little cringy, right? I think that there are a lot of people that are posting I stand with SAG-AFTRA, because it's more of a don't forget about me, don't forget me kind of a thing. Here's me. Like, there are people that are posting pictures of themselves walking the picket line that really have nothing to do with the dispute.
Yeah.
You know,
you're a plumber.
Yeah.
What are you doing there?
And look, it's one thing to say, hey, you know, I support, you know, what the actors are fighting for and what the writers are fighting for. I support that. That's cool. You know, whenever anyone like goes on strike, if the auto workers went on strike, I'd be like, well, I guess there's a reason and I support them, you know? But I do think some of the posts are getting a little cringy, and it's like, you should be picketing because you really believe that you're fighting for something, you know, not because you think it looks good to post on social media that you're on the picket line. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, no,
more, just more virtue signaling bullshit to me anyway.
Yeah, it's attention gathering. You're exactly right about that. And, you know, you should spend more time on the picket line, less time posting shit on social media about it if you feel that strongly.
Yeah. And the only other thing I would say is people are focused on what the salaries of like these CEOs are of these entertainment companies. And I don't dispute that, right? I have my opinions about executive pay in this country, you know. But I think it's a little disingenuous to call that out, but not point out that, like, say, you know, a Will Smith gets $30 million for one movie. I have yet to see him say, you know what, take 20% of that and put it back into the budget to pay the second tier and third tier people who are in the movie. You know, I have never, ever heard of anyone doing that. So
no, but to be fair, and I don't know necessarily that Will Smith has done this, but there have been top tier actors who have taken no pay, or at the very least, you know, SAG after minimum, you know, scale to make a movie so that it could be made because of budget constraints.
I'm sure you're always going to find like the good guy in the crowd. You know, I'm just saying, if you're going to point out, like, to me, the 1% is the 1%, no matter how you look at it. Right. So if you're going to look at the top tier of executives, I think you have to look at the top tier of like the performers as well. That's my only point.
Well, and you know? Fran Drescher, who's the president of SAG after, SAG.
Yeah, yeah.
She gave a speech, I guess it was this morning. It was either this morning or within the last day or two, because I didn't look at the date that this was posted on Facebook. But, you know, she made a good point, and I think it's something that people tend to forget, is that this isn't about the Tom Cruises, you know, or the Will Smiths or the Leo DiCaprios. You know, this is about the journeyman, you know, the majority of whom make less than $10,000 a year. Well, from acting, I'm sure they have other gigs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she's making the point that this isn't about, you know, the big guys like Tom Cruise, they can make their own deals. You know, this isn't about them. You know, this is about, you know, the struggling actor who's, you know, the waiter at Denny's during the day. And I think people kind of forget about that. But more importantly, what's not really being talked about a lot or enough about, I think, is the reasons for the strike. And one of the main reasons is the AI. Now, one of the things that the producers, you know, for lack of a better word, in Hollywood want is to be able to use the, you know, the faces of background actors in perpetuity. You know, once they've got it filmed, then they should be able to use it in anything else they want to use it in and not pay them. Now, how fair is that?
Right. Oh, that's complete bullshit.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, I'm sure, but then again, I'm sure there's like some deal that they could strike to say, okay, you're allowed to use my likeness under these circumstances. Like, say, like when an athlete signs a deal for like a video game or something, you know, they're like, okay, you can use my license under the my likeness under these circumstances for this amount of time or whatever, you know.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I know that that's one of the sticking points.
Yeah, at some point every actor is going to have to license their likeness. And imagine if, you know, the licensing fee that you got was determined by how you look. I'd have to pay people.
Yeah. Scott, we'll give you 12 cents and we have the right to use your likeness forever.
Oh, good. I got a raise from the 8 cents from the last 30 years.
Yeah, no, I get it, man. And like the studios are very sneaky, right? You know? I talked about this with our buddy Mark Boutros, and we were going back and forth, and he was kind of making an argument that when it comes to like the box office, you can measure how many tickets are sold. Like it's more empirical. And I'm like, no, I'm not buying that. I work in the computer industry, right? In our system, right? Our support desk, we can measure down to the minute how much time one of our support analysts spent on the phone with a client, how quickly they answered the phone. Like, we can measure everything.
Oh, absolutely.
So for Netflix to say, well, we can't really accurately measure the number of streams or the time, bullshit. Of course they can. It's just data. They just don't want to pay. You know,
yeah,
when they're paying like 6 cents per streaming hour or something, come on. You know, you mean to tell me you can't figure out how long someone is watching a movie for? Shut up.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, these streaming companies have had it so good for so long. And now people saying, hey, wait a minute here. You know, and they don't even get to use the argument of, well, you know, it's still untested water. We've been streaming for how long now? The water's been tested. You know exactly how much you're going to make. And you knew before you even really started streaming and started creating, quote unquote, content about cost versus profit. So don't give me that bullshit. You know, Wade, our good friend Wade, when he had his movies streaming on Amazon, you know, he was getting, you know, thousands of hours of views on his movies per month. But, you know, he was getting next to nothing in pay for it. You know, now I understand, you know, it's Amazon. So, you know, you're free to either keep your movies on there or not. Well, and he opted not to because it wasn't worth the headaches of dealing with it. So he eventually took them off, except for the ones that his American distributor has. But, you know, they get nothing unless you're a super group, you know, like, you know, Taylor Swift, you know, who gets tens of millions of listens every month. Or, you know, if you're a blockbuster, you know, like a Marvel movie or whatever that gets tens of millions of, you know, views a month, you're not going to make shit out of streaming. And that's not fair. It's not. Now, I'm not saying, you know, you should have 80% of the profits or whatever, but you should have more than the 3 or 4% that you get, if it's even that.
Yeah, man. You know, I know it about it just from YouTube, right? Now, Grant, you need at minimum 1,000 subscribers before you can even start to monetize on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
So, and even then, you get pennies per stream or whatever, or per minute, whatever it is. I don't even know because I didn't get that far yet. So there's gotta be a way to divvy up the pie a little more fairly. Like, I don't get me wrong, man. I'm a capitalist. I get it. Our system is a capitalist system, and that's how it is. I just think that there's gotta be a way to carve it up a little more fairly. That's all I've ever said. The CEO of a corporation should make more money than someone working in the mailroom, right? It's just, right? That's just the nature of a corporate structure.
Well, but, yeah, absolutely.
You know, when you have the difference is like 300 times what that person is making, then you're like, you know, yeah. There's got to be a way to divvy this up a little bit better, you know?
Well, there has to, because we're at a point now where even though inflation is about at the lowest that it's been in quite a long time, prices have not necessarily fallen. You know,
right?
I'm in conjunction with that, which is no surprise. You know, these corporations jack the prices up during inflation, and they're pretty much keeping them there. You know, the only thing that fluctuates is the price of gas. And while it's still expensive, it's cheaper than what it's been in a fairly long time now. Cheaper being a relative term, I think I saw it was like $3.75 a gallon for unleaded. But, you know, just a couple of months ago, it was well over $4.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, going to the grocery store, I'm paying the same prices that I was paid when inflation was 10%. So, you know, when you have inflation down, but prices still up, you know, and wages are kind of stagnant, you know, something has to give, or else you're going to have workers who aren't going to be able to work because they're unable to house themselves or feed themselves or clothe themselves. Then you're going to have a even higher population of the homeless. And it's just, it's ridiculous. You know, there is more than enough money to go around. You know, exactly how much does somebody like Elon Musk or Bill Gates actually need to be comfortable? You know, or even the CEO of a small business. You know, there comes a point where the amount that you make exceeds your ability to be able to spend it or live on comfortably for the rest of your life. There needs to be more equity. And I'm not saying everybody needs to be paid equal, but you know, you got to give people a break. We have no more middle class anymore.
Right. Well, and that is my problem, right? And look, I'm not a supporter of punishing, you know, just punitively punishing people who have quote unquote made it. Like you said, the local guy who is successful because he now owns a chain of like 10 pizzerias or something, you know, he should benefit from the fruits of that labor. You know
absolutely,
what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, but you're right. As you get higher and higher, then it just becomes about bragging rights at the country club, right? So yeah. Now, granted, one thing, and I had to explain this to my daughter, people don't grasp how like these executives get paid, you know? So they love to share this graphic that David Zaslav, the CEO of Warner Brothers, over the last 5 years has earned almost $500 million in compensation. They did not write him a check for $500 million, you know?
Oh, no.
His base salary is X. It's still high. Don't get me wrong. His base salary is still like $30 million or $40 million or something like that. But it's mostly stock options, right? So if Warner Brothers stock tanked tomorrow, it could easily wipe out like half that value. My point always is if you're whining that you can't give people a raise, if Zaslav said, I'll take a $10 million a year pay cut, put the rest back into the kitty. he'd still be making $30 million a year. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like, okay, how big does your yacht have to be? You know, and I'm not saying that he should just be punished for being wealthy, because then there come a time where you will stifle business, because people will say, well, why should I be successful or build a company? I'm just going to get punished for it. But this disparity, like you said, between the top echelon and the bottom echelon is really getting big. I make a good salary, dude. I'm not going to lie. And I still struggle. You know, I live paycheck to paycheck, like a lot of people in this country. You know, I have a daughter going off to college, and I lie awake at night trying to figure out how I'm going to pay for it. You know?
Yeah.
So, and I do pretty well for myself salary wise. I'm just stating a fact, you know? So I don't know enough about that. I hope it gets resolved, because there's going to be a lot of fallout, right? It's people forget, like, if movie productions are not going on, lighting technicians are not getting paid. Sound artists are not getting paid. Visual effects artists are not getting paid. You know, it doesn't just affect the members of SAG. You know what I mean? There's all trickle down, where people are going to suffer, you know, and it sucks. I just hope cooler heads prevail and it gets resolved sooner rather than later.
I hope so, too, because it's going to be a dry season at the movies otherwise. Because how many movies that were supposed to go into production, you know, are now stopped?
Well, I read an article about that. The dry spell will start after summer of next year, because there's enough things in the pipeline and in the can to where the release schedule, at least for the rest of this year, will unfold, you know, and then we'll start to feel it, you know, later, and it'll be another summer of reality TV, I guess.
All right, so have you seen anything?
You know, not really, Scott. I am starting. We talked about Indiana Jones and the Dial of Disappointment. But I did see, I posted about it. I watched this neat little movie called The Sleep Experiment. And that was pretty good. I recommend it. It's worth a watch. Because if you're familiar with the story, it's one of the creepier creepypastas that's out there. So I did enjoy that. Other than that, I am almost done watching the final season of The X-Files.
Oh, finally.
Which I had never watched. It's like that when it came back a few years ago for two seasons, you know? And I didn't think it was possible for Gillian Anderson to get even hotter than she was in the original run of the series. But older Scully, with sort of a deeper, raspier voice, bordering in like Kathleen Turner territory, I was like, damn. No wonder, you know, Mulder ended up with her. Oh, I'm such a sexist bastard. I really am.
Oh, well.
And send your hate mail to... it's funny. I just Googled, because I was like, okay, we got like 7 minutes left. What are we going to talk about? So I Googled like entertainment news, and I'm on page6.com. Dude, I am so far out of touch. I'm reading these articles and I'm like, other than Kim Kardashian, I don't know who any of these fucking people are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on here?
Oh, I know. I don't feel so out of touch with society as I do when I'm on Microsoft Teams and a bunch of my coworkers talking about this group or that group or this actor or some personality or or even worse, some vlogger or influencer. And I'm like, who the fuck are you talking about?
You know? Right.
I had no fucking clue. You know, I get lost. I'm at that age. I just don't know who the fuck these people are anymore.
Although in my line of work, there was a very famous sort of tech celebrity death this week. Kevin Mitnick, who was at
hacker.
Yeah, the most wanted hacker in the world.
I remember him very
right?
well.
You remember Kevin Mitnick, right?
Yeah.
So he got arrested and then he got out, right? He was convicted. He got out. And he was under supervised release. He hacked into Pacific Bell's voicemail computers.
Yeah.
Like, he did all this crazy shit with telephone access and wire fraud and everything. And it was crazy. He back when, like when he was only 12, he would get free rides in LA's public transportation system because they still used punch cards at that time, as tickets. And he built his own punch tool so that he could get just unlimited bus schedules, for free.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of a big deal. We were talking about it at work, that Mitnick had passed away. He was only 59. He had pancreatic cancer. Wow. Yeah. Holy but, yeah, it was a big deal, right? He was in the news. Like, see, I mentioned it, and you immediately knew who he was.
Yeah, absolutely. I hadn't heard about that. When did that happen?
July 16th, he actually passed. So just like 3 or 4 days ago.
Oh, okay.
As we record this. Yeah. But yeah. And then of course he became a white hat hacker and, started his own company and, became like a cybersecurity consultant, So
didn't he start that magazine? Oh, what was it called? It was a hacker magazine. 2642 or something like that. I'm gonna have to look that up. Because I know that he was like big at hacker conventions prior to his arrest.
Oh yeah.
What is the name of that? I'm gonna have to look that magazine.
He wrote a couple of books. I mean, he wrote The Art of Deception, was the big book that he wrote. And Ghost in the Wire, he was a book that he wrote just about his exploits. I don't remember the magazine though.
2600.
Ah, okay. I don't know why I don't remember that, but anyway. So, and with that, look, we managed to kill like the last 5 minutes. So with that, we rambled all over the place and we are out of time, my friend.
Oh,
dear, darn.
Dear. Okay. Well, what have you got going on?
Well, so on our next session, I'll talk about, I am heading out this weekend to the Long Island International Film Expo. Dutch is screening there this weekend. And I am also part of a panel called Better Festing, How to Submit Your Film to Film Festivals. So me and a bunch of other festival directors will be on a panel to talk about that. So that'll be fun. Long Island International Film Expo is one of the premier film festivals on the East Coast. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
So and then, slowly in dribs and drabs, I am finally editing all of the interviews that I've done recently at various conventions. Brent Spiner was a hoot. Folks, if you haven't seen my interview with Brent Spiner, go to my YouTube channel. He is a world-class ball breaker, as it turns out.
Did you post about that on Facebook? Because I didn't see that.
I did. Yeah, I shared it. That one and my interview with Todd Stashwick both went up. I'll share it again. I know, you know, sometimes things just get lost in the noise,
yeah,
you know, on social media, but that one was fun. That dude, we talk about this all the time. Sometimes I'm like, how do I even get to do some of the cool shit that I do? You know?
Yeah.
Oh, I just, you know, and I'm standing there, it's Brent Spiner, and Boutros is running camera for me. And he's like, Todd, it's slow. There's nobody online. Just ask him. What could he say? No. And surprisingly, he agreed to the interview. He's like, look, can we just keep it under 10 minutes? And I'm like, yeah, it's all it's going to be anyway. And then I'm sitting there and it occurs to me, I'm talking to Data from Star Trek. You know, super nice guy, but a ball breaker. And he's really good at it because there are times where you can't figure out if he's serious or not. You know, when he says things like, okay, can you get the hell away from me now? I'm like, oh shit, I've overstayed my welcome. You know, like, but it was very cool. And then, you know, Todd Stashwick was another good one because he was great in this season of Star Trek Picard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he was.
So good stuff.
Well, I think that's very cool that you're doing a panel about festing. I've been asked by the National Hemorrhoid Society to do a panel about festering. Oddly enough, so.
Hey, listen, go for it, man. Everybody's smart about something.
Right? And who would know more about ass bumps than me?
This is true. I can't think of anybody.
Nor would you want to.
No.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Well, the new book is coming along nicely. I'm at about 7,500 words, I think. I've been posting regular updates, and by regular, I mean two since I started writing it. But it's a good way for me to keep myself accountable and make sure that I finish this fucking thing this time.
Mm.
And it's been 3 years since I put out Errors of the Flesh. But it's going well, and I'm getting kind of excited by it. Oddly enough, in spite of it featuring gay characters, again, there's no graphic sex. I decided that I've done that. There's no point in doing it again. You know,
damn it.
And insert slot A into tab B, you know. We've all seen that.
Yes.
So it's kind of going to be like more of a tamed version, I suppose, of barbed wire kisses, I guess. As I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, it's going to be set in the Old West, and it's going to be a creepy carnival and ghosts and a tree made out of demons and ghosts, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Nice.
And the worst part about writing it at this point is just setting up the characters and setting up the point where the shit can really get good. Because there's always that fine line of, you know, am I putting in, you know, too much backstory, and is it taking too long? Is it too boring? That's always one of the hardest things for me to gauge. Then I have to remind myself, well, whether there's too much or not, just keep fucking writing. And when it's done, you can always cut the shit out, which you're going to do anyway. So,
sure.
But it's always a balancing act. So that's coming along. And by the end of the year, I would say it's not an unreasonable guess to have this out.
Cool.
Yeah. I was hoping to have the special edition of Barbed Wire Kisses out this year, but with Wade moving to Wales this week, as a matter of fact, this weekend, you know, things have gotten pushed a little bit further. So it may not be out for its 10th anniversary, but it will be out. It's the next thing I'll work on as soon as I finish this. And that's what I'm working on. And in the meantime, you can pick up my other books at Amazon. You can get the ebooks wherever ebooks are sold. And you can get the audiobook versions at audible.com.
Fan-fucking-tastic.
You know, and I really need to keep posting about these on Facebook because I'm so bad at self-promotion. Surprisingly,
I know.
You know. So that's it. That's what's going on. That's what I've got coming out.
Very cool. Well, speaking of cool, try to stay cool.
I will. And until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.